From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Bobby Everson, Matthew Phillips, Edson Aaron Bodoni, Boyd Weekly, Patrick Bacon, Shea Paniry, and James Everett. Since 2019, five suspected homicides, two alleged suicides, add up to seven lives lost at the United States Penitentiary in Thompson, a village of fewer than 1,000 people in northwest Illinois. From January 2019 through October of last year, there were also 167 recorded assaults at the prison. The number is thought to be a significant undercount, as it does not include more serious incidents and deaths dealt with outside of the prison disciplinary system. Thompson houses the Federal Bureau of Prisons Special Management Unit, a program meant for violent and disruptive prisoners, though many who end up being subjected to it do not fit that description. The BOP's Special Management Unit was formerly housed inside the U.S. Penitentiary in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania, a prison that was notorious for high rates of violence among cellmates and abuse by staff. When the unit was moved to Thompson, some hoped the new facility would mean better conditions, but violence and abuse proliferated, just as it had at Lewisburg. All this is the subject of a recent investigation by NPR and the Marshall Project. Today we're joined by the two reporters behind the story. Christy Thompson is with the Marshall Project. Joe Shapiro is with NPR. Their piece is called How the Newest Federal Prison Became One of the Deadliest. Christy, Joe, thank you so much for being with us. Welcome to the 21st Show.
Thanks for having us.
And just a warning to listeners, we're going to be having a frank discussion about some pretty disturbing allegations of mistreatment. So if you have younger listeners with you, take that into consideration. You can join our conversation at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Or tweet us at 21st Show, 21st Show. So, Christy, I'm going to begin with you. How did you first hear about what was happening at the U.S. Penitentiary, Thompson?
Joe and I have been writing about the special management unit since 2016. We've been doing a lot of reporting about what's called double-celled solitary confinement, which is when you take two people and lock them down in a cell together for nearly 23, 24 hours a day, which we know can breed a lot of violence and tension. And the special management unit, we started writing about it when it was housed at Lewisburg, covered the allegations that men there were making about the high rates of violence, the high rates of abuse by staff. And when they closed that unit in 2018, after we ran our stories, we wanted to follow what was happening when they moved it to this new facility, whether that would mean better conditions, better treatment by staff for the men who were incarcerated there. And it didn't take long before we and attorneys and family members started getting letters that were making very familiar claims of abuse about what was happening at Thompson. And then we started to see the number of deaths rise and rise in comparison, a lot higher than many other federal prisons.
I was struck by this idea of two people in, because the idea of solitary confinement is supposed to be bad. Is there like some philosophical reason they have for putting two people in this kind of situation?
So the Bureau of Prisons tells us that they double house people in restricted housing intentionally. They say that it makes these cells less isolating and that it cuts down on self-harm and suicide. But in our years of covering this kind of conditions, we hear over and over again from psychologists and people who have lived in these situations that double-celled solitary is actually even worse than single-celled solitary, because you're still isolated, you're still cut off from meaningful programming, from your families, from time outside of your cell, but now you also have to contend with this constant tension and pressure of another person in your cell, someone who you have no say over, you don't know much about their history, what they did to end up in solitary, and you have no escape from if something were to happen.
So Joe Shapiro, I want to bring you into the conversation. Did the Federal Bureau of Prisons, when they switched from the facility in Lewisburg to Thompson, did they bring staff over, or was it, you know, in an attempt at making a clean slate here?
They did bring some staff over, and I believe the original warden came from Lewisburg. They and some of the men who are at who moved to the new facility at Thompson wrote that some of the corrections officers would tell the prisoners that we want to make sure that that you're not moving to someplace that's softer than Lewisburg, and that they were intentionally harsh, were harsh in discipline and the use of restraints, putting people in restraints, or sometimes even 4-point restraints, where each limb is handcuffed and attached. The people are stretched over a bed or a chair. That when the staff first got there, they wanted to make sure that these men who had been transferred knew that this was not going to be a softer place. This is according to some of the things that we found in records written to the judge in Northern Illinois by one of the prisoners who described the conditions that he found once he got to Thompson.
What, just to be clear, what sort of thing, and I know not everybody who ends up in this special management unit is, you know, necessarily fits the definition of who is supposed to be there, but who is it supposed to be for within the system?
So it's supposed to be for the most dangerous prisoners, for people who've created violence or disruption at other prisons, or it's supposed to be for people who are gang leaders who've created violence, and other people who have created disturbances. But a lot of the people that we've written about don't seem to fit that description. And we wrote, for example, about a man named Matt Phillips. He was the first to die in March of 2020. And he was Jewish. He had a big Star of David tattooed on his chest. And he'd been at another prison in Louisiana where he'd been attacked by members of a white supremacist prison gang. And he filed a complaint against the corrections officers, and said, I never should have been put in a situation where they could have attacked me. And the next thing that happens is he gets sent to this high security prison at Thompson. And twice he's put into a recreation cage with known white supremacists. And that last time he's attacked and he's brutally kicked and stomped, and he dies a few days later. And those two men have since been charged with murder and a hate crime. We've seen cases like that where the person who ended up at Thompson didn't seem to fit into that definition of a dangerous, disruptive person who that special management unit was designed to hold. And we've seen that with other people. Sometimes it's people who've had mental health issues and maybe aren't getting their medications or getting the mental health treatment they need, and maybe they act out and somehow they end up in these special management units. We've written about a few men who fit that description who died, including the most recent person to die at Thompson, a man named James Everett.
One more thing about the placement in these units is that for the family members, especially after someone dies, it's really hard for them to find out why their loved one ended up here at all. You know, Matt Phillips was a first-time offender. He was nearing the end of his sentence. Bobby Everson was nearing the end of his sentence. And his family can't figure out why they were even sent there in the first place. And sometimes I've talked to people who they themselves don't really understand why they're being sent there. The prison administrative process that decides who gets sent there is sort of notoriously stacked against the prisoners who are trying to fight for which prison they end up in. And the last thing I wanted to say is that who's not supposed to be at this prison is people with serious mental illness. That's very clear in the BOP policy. And we heard when the SMU was at Lewisburg, and again, now that it's at Thompson, that people with serious mental illness, many who say that they're not getting the treatment and medication that they need, are still ending up in this unit.
All right, let me take a moment to reintroduce my guests. This is the 21st show. We're speaking with Christy Thompson of the Marshall Project and Joe Shapiro from NPR, and they collaborated on a story about the federal prison in Thompson, Illinois, and a number of suspicious deaths, 5 suspected homicides, 2 alleged suicides, and more than 167, I should say, recorded assaults at the prison from January 2019 through October of last year. And if you want to join our conversation, the number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. And we mentioned Bobby Everson. We pulled a couple of clips from your story. He was featured prominently in the story. Let's listen to an excerpt of a letter that he wrote to a cousin in October 2021.
and I got in a little scuffle with another dude they put me in the cell with. I feel the staff here is purposefully trying to put me in situations of conflict. I'm doing all I can to stay out the way. Pray for your little cuz, man, that I get through unscathed.
Okay, so he says he feels the staff is putting him in situations like this. You talked about Matthew Phillips, who had, the big Star of David tattoo, put in a cage, literally a cage with two people with white supremacist affiliations. Joe, can you say more about how the prison is assigning people, and specifically for Bobby Everson, what he experienced in the lead up to his death last year?
It is very complicated in prison to keep people apart who are rivals. It's gangs, it's geographic, it's where they come from in the United States. There are all sorts of things that have to be considered. So it's not easy, but that is part of the reason for the special management unit to make that separation. We found, again, with Bobby Everson, his letters home are heartbreaking because he ends up at Thompson. He's not sure why. He's scared, and then he seems more and more desperate in these letters. And that letter that you heard read was written about just weeks before he died. He felt like he was being targeted by the corrections officers and put in a place where he was in danger. And we had a letter sent to us the day that he died from another prisoner who was in a neighboring cell, who said that it was known that the man that Bobby Everson was put in a cell with, the man who we're told attacked Bobby Everson, that man was known to be violent, that he'd been telling the corrections officers for days, weeks, that he didn't want anybody in his cell. He didn't want Bobby Everson in the cell. Bobby Everson, by the way, was a small man, about 5'6". And we're told that this other man was tall and large. And this man was telling the corrections officers that he was just didn't want people in his cell. He didn't want this guy in his cell. And he was saying, you better get him out of here or I'm going to attack him. And even he said that even on the night, our witness says, of the attack. And our witness says that the corrections officer just said, go ahead, do it.
We have another clip from your story. This is of Everson's mother, Sabrina, and sister, Ebony, talking about how they were informed about Everson's death. Let's take a listen to that.
He said he was sorry to inform me that they had found AJ on.
They found him unresponsive in his cell at 9 a.m. in the morning.
Christy, what other information did the family receive about the circumstances around his death?
Yeah, so I want to clarify, AJ is the family nickname that they used for Bobby. And a lot of families had really similar experiences to theirs in which they get a call from a prison chaplain that might say, your son was found unresponsive. They might give some broad strokes about how he was killed. The Eversons were told that.
Nope, I think we might have had an interruption with the Zoom connection there. Joe, if you're still with
right,
us,
I am.
Can you pick up where she was talking about the family and how they were informed of what had happened?
Right. So that's, as Christy was saying, it's usually people get a call from the chaplain.
Bobby died from blunt force trauma.
All right, yeah. go ahead, Joe.
Okay,
we seem to be having an issue with your connection, so we're gonna have Joe take us to the break in about 2 minutes here.
All right. So as I said, as Christy was saying, that the family will get a call from the prison chaplain. They usually don't say very much about what happened. I think in the Eversons we're told that he'd been injured. But they weren't told much. The Matt Phillips family was told. They flew from Texas to their son ended up in a hospital across the river in Iowa, and they weren't even sure which hospital he was in. And in fact, while the mother was calling around at the hospital to try to get information where her son was, where she called the hospital where she thought he was, and she then was notified by a representative of the prison that she wasn't supposed to call the hospital, that all communication would go through the Bureau of Prisons representative at Thompson, and that whether she could even go see her son had to be approved by the warden, that she was told she wasn't allowed to talk to the doctors at the hospital where he ended up. And so she had to be careful, because she said she felt like if she said the wrong thing or did the wrong thing, she would be denied the chance to be with her son as he was dying, handcuffed to the bed, intubated. At one point, not able to speak.
Yeah.
And she was only allowed 10-minute visits with him, and one the first day and two the second day. And
all
he
right.
died on the third day.
We're going to have to continue this conversation after a short break. We're speaking about a story about Thompson Federal Penitentiary. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are speaking about a joint investigation from NPR and the Marshall Project about the United States Penitentiary in Thompson, Illinois. The piece is called How the Newest Federal Prison Became One of the Deadliest. And it's about how a strikingly high number of people incarcerated there have either been killed or committed suicide, 5 suspected homicides, 2 alleged suicides since 2019, plus 167 recorded assaults at the prison in that time frame. And that's thought to be an undercount because there are incidents that are dealt with outside of the prison disciplinary system. We're speaking with Christy Thompson from the Marshall Project and Joe Shapiro from NPR, 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation. Let's talk a little bit about the reaction to your story, because Illinois U.S. Senator Dick Durbin figures into your story. He played a prominent role in working to get the federal government to buy Thompson. Some of our longtime Illinois residents among our listeners will remember that that was built as a state prison and then sat vacant. It was never used. And he sort of celebrated the fact that it was, you know, the federal system purchased it. He was asked about your report during a visit to Rockford last week. This is what he had to say.
We want to make certain that the services that are being rendered there are fair and consistent with America's values. Serious questions have been raised, and we've called for the Inspector General and others to take a close look at this. No excuses. Just because it's a home state prison doesn't mean it's going to be treated any differently than the rest. It'll be held to the highest standards.
All right, and thank you to our partner station, WNIJ, for that tape. I should also note that Durbin and Senator Tammy Duckworth and local Congresswoman Sherry Bustos sent a letter to the Inspector General at the Department of Justice demanding an investigation into the report. Joe, can you talk about what responsibility legislators have in the running of the prisons and what's been happening in Thompson specifically?
Well, Senator Durbin also said that he will hold hearings about the use of solitary confinement in federal prisons. So the members of the state delegation can hold hearings, and they can put pressure on the Department of Justice to look into the kinds of abuses that we wrote about. And of course, as you mentioned, Senator Durbin and I think also Sherry Bustos from that district have played an important role in getting the federal government to purchase that prison and use it as a federal prison. And so that kind of letter does have some influence, and those lawmakers do have power to create that scrutiny, and they've asked the Inspector General at the Department of Justice to investigate. Also, just this morning, a group of civil rights, human rights, religious groups, and health groups called the Federal Anti-Solitary Task Force released the two letters, one to President Biden asking that the federal government close Thompson, also to appoint a new director of the Bureau of Prisons. The current one is leaving, who will be committed to human rights and racial justice. The letter called the conditions at Thompson egregious, and a second letter also went to the Inspector General at the Justice Department asking for an investigation.
Christy, what did the Bureau of Prisons say in response to this investigation that you did?
So we asked the Bureau of Prisons for an interview, which they declined. And so we sent them a long list of questions and basically detailing every finding that everyone had told us about what was happening at Thompson. And with the individual claims, they said pretty broadly that they couldn't talk to us about individual cases. They said they couldn't talk to us about pending litigation. But they said, you know, sort of generally that they take these allegations seriously and that they look into allegations of staff misconduct, and that for serious allegations, those get referred to the Inspector General, who is now the one being called on to do a more widespread investigation of this facility. I also wanted to note, when you talk about the history of Thompson, I think it's important to know too that when this prison was opened, officials, both, you know, state congressional members, but also prison officials, were saying at a very high level that opening Thompson was going to make federal prisons safer because it was going to decrease overcrowding in all of the facilities, and that the special management unit is specifically built to make, you know, these dangerous, violent prisoners safer to go back to general population and safer to go back to their communities. And what we see is that that's not happening. These places have become hotbeds of violence and 5 men have died. So the promises made for this prison are really not, you know, the reality of what's happening now.
Is there sort of, you know, I know it's the Federal Bureau of Prisons. It's not like a lot of states, they don't call it a Department of Corrections. Are there attempts to, you know, do that sort of work of corrections, counseling, mental health services, things like that? I know you said people with mental health disorders are not supposed to be housed here, but is there that kind of work happening in these facilities?
There's some, but at the special management unit, almost all of it happens in cell. And, you know, the special management unit was sued when it was at Lewisburg because pretty much the counseling and therapy, according to the lawsuit, accounted to, you know, crossword puzzles and some workbooks for people to work on in their cell. And what little, you know, at prisons across the country, what little sort of programming like this is available was cut back so drastically during the pandemic, and a lot of it has yet to come back. So at Thompson, there is some programming, but what happens is just within a cell, and that normally means, you know, workbooks and small things for people to do in their cell, not meaningful out of cell time with other people.
Christy, I'm curious, in the time we have remaining, how do you go about reporting a story like this, right? It's not something where you can just go knock on someone's door with a tape recorder and a notepad and ask for an interview, right?
Absolutely not. And we know that, you know, prisons are these black boxes. They're some of the most hidden institutions in our country. So we start with a lot of records requests through the federal FOIA law. And that's a law that says the government has to hand over things like data on assaults and internal records about certain incidents, although the prison can and will try and shield those as much as possible, saying that, you know, they can't disclose them or it's for the security of the facility. And then we rely a lot on letters and phone calls. We're often denied access to interview people in prison. We talk to a lot of people once they've been transferred to other facilities or even once they've been released, because all of their correspondence when they're at that facility is being monitored by guards, all of their phone calls, all their letters. So they're at a really high risk of speaking out about what's happening inside. We rely a lot on filings that are made in federal court, people writing pro se legal complaints, writing to their judge, which for a lot of prisoners is sort of their last resort to get the word out about what's happening to them or what's happening to the man in the cell next to them. And then we speak a lot to families who are getting, you know, correspondence from their loved ones or who are trying to figure out what happened to their loved ones who died, and also to attorneys and advocates who are, you know, frequently corresponding with people or maybe doing, you know, reviews of what the conditions are like in that facility. So we have to take a lot of these different kinds of tools to chip away at this wall behind these facilities that are really built to keep people like us out and to keep us from knowing what's going on inside.
All right. Well, I think we need to leave it there. The story, again, is from NPR and the Marshall Project. It's called How the Newest Federal Prison Became One of the Deadliest. Christy Thompson is with the Marshall Project. Joe Shapiro is with NPR News. Christy, Joe, thank you so much for being with us on the 21st Show and sharing your reporting with us.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having us.